songs and signs, you know, like around and ready to start again. So Fiona's is Sparkwood, which are really, really important talents. So exciting because it's our Queen's first, first glitterific ID. First glitterific ID in like 40 years or something like that. So it's
pardon? In more than 40 years.
54 years. We're looking for speakers. So we changed it to 7-minute speeches, so it's similar format to what we have in our weekly debates, but it is it's an ID competition, so you get a motion, 15 minutes to prepare, stand up, speak, and it's all done. So it'll be really exciting, and if you would like to speak to Ben, who's here, and even more exciting for Queen students, it's free. So we're waiving the fee for Queen students, and I'll be held right here, and I think we have teams from Scotland, and with CAs from Scotland and London and things coming over, so we've got to figure out this. And it is the 27th to 28th of February. Secondly, Schools Competition is on the 24th of February on a Wednesday, so you should all be free at least in the afternoon. So if you would like to come and judge the competition, please speak to Liliana. Please speak to Lily, and judging is people have judged last year. It's you don't need any previous experience, and like the school children are really, really good players, so it's an exciting.
You'll probably get a free lunch as well.
And you get a free lunch without that, sponsored by Alpha Newspaper Group for all of these directors. Another thing is council positions. So our AGM is going to be the 15th of March, so if you would like to be on council and help organise schools competitions, IVs, weekly debates, chair meetings, manage money, other things, literally give your CV, really exciting, and you get to be a part of the organisation. So please do get in contact with any of us, and there'll be more details of that soon. And next we're moving on to private members business, I think. So this is a chance for you to, I think you forgot. Private members business. So if anybody has anything from the news they'd like to talk about, like questions about society, any questions in general? News items, front of something news, interesting. Okay, that's fine. next we're on to questions. Has anyone got any questions? Yes.
Madam President, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a cup of tea. That's about it. A sandwich about 4 o'clock. Yes.
Madam President, can you do any impressions?
Impressions.
That was a really good question.
Just got no time. Be okay. People forgot that. No, I can't. Sorry.
I could nominate someone to do one for Owen.
Any other president's questions? No, grand, okay. So tonight's motion. Tonight's motion is this place would withdraw benefits for parents that will not vaccinate their children. So formal debate, as you all know, 7-minute speeches, first and last minute are protected, and that will be signified by me ringing the bell, which is in that box, so I can't demonstrate. During the middle 5 minutes, you can ask any questions, so just stand up and say, I'm a point sir, I'm a point ma'am, and ask a question briefly. Please leave about 30 seconds of period of time between questions, otherwise you get shouts from your barking from everybody in the room and me. And there will be questions and answers at the end. So I think that's about it. We're just like starting a great time ever. And I would like to welcome our first speaker for the proposition, Miss Evie Watts.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Evie and I'm the first proctor tonight. Craig has been trying to get me to lose my debating virginity for quite some time, and like many girls before me, I finally succumbed to the persuasive nature.
Okay.
support is enduring benefits from parents who refuse to vaccinate their children. And to define that for you, what we propose is that we are taking away child benefits and childcare allowances for parents who refuse to vaccinate their children to their NHS schedule. And if they go beyond a year, that is when we take away these benefits. So the first thing I'm going to talk to you now is about vaccination, the impact of vaccination and the success of this model in Australia, which has come into play January 1st, 2016. Okay, so vaccines are a modern miracle which has completely changed the epidemiology and disease burdens of this world. Does anyone disagree with that comment? No, I don't think so. And it's saved more lives than any other drug or procedure in the last 50 years. So the idea of vaccines, you're taking a small part of a pathogen, which is inactive and completely safe. You're injecting it into the person, and therefore you're going to mount an immune response, and if you come into contact with that pathogen again, you're not going to get a fully fledged disease, and you're protected against that. And if enough people are vaccinated, there's this idea of herd immunity, which basically means that people that are non-vaccinated also are protected, because if enough people are vaccinated, they're less likely to come into contact with the pathogen themselves. So we have this whole population sort of protective factor, which is what we're aiming for here. An example of how successful this has been is the eradication of smallpox, which was declared eradicated by the World Health Organization in 1980. And that was brought about by a worldwide drive to vaccinate levels of 80%, and by doing that, we completely wiped out the disease. So,
it has started to reappear within the last few years.
The only confirmed case has been in a laboratory accident in 1986, to my knowledge. So I don't believe that to be true, but I haven't read that, that's true. Okay, so two of the main vaccines that you might know about are the 5-in-1, so the diphtheria, tetanus, whooping cough, polio and hepatitis B, which you get when you're 2 months old, and the MMR, which you get when you're 13 months old, which is also a topic of quite a hot debate here. So if we look at what happens when you don't vaccinate, we just need to look historically. So as you, I'm sure, are all aware, an article was published in The Lancet which said that there was a link between autism and the MMR vaccine. This has since been proven to be absolutely rubbish. There was no scientific based evidence behind that. Doctors have been struck off by the GMC. This is just completely, science behind it was really not quite correct. But because of that, the MMR vaccination levels dropped to about 80%. And if you look into our crystal ball, in 2012, there were 2,030 outbreaks of measles in England and Wales. And today, vaccination levels are still a problem. In some parts of London, the vaccination levels are said to be about 80%. Overall, they're about 90-ish, but we still haven't got to the 95% level that we need to completely protect people against measles, which is why there needs to be this drive to get the vaccination levels up and get everyone vaccinated. There's also a huge cost to the NHS. The outbreak in Swansea in 2012 cost £500,000 to the NHS for protecting and treating these people. So why would parents not vaccinate their children? This to me seems completely ludicrous. I don't understand there would be any reasons why you would not be vaccinating your child. And the reasons are some are too lazy to take their child, so the rates of getting your first jab are higher than the rates of getting your second. So that just proves that they're not doing this for any sort of moral reason, they're doing this for pure laziness, can't be bothered to take their child sort of thing. Sometimes, when you're 14 years old, you're going to go get your HPV jab, which protects you against cervical cancer, and that was introduced in 2008. When I was a 14-year-old girl, I was drinking Strongbow down the park with my friends. I really wasn't worried about going to get my HPV, and you need your parents there to be like, no, you need to go and get this for your own safety. So that needs to be a thing. But also, parents don't believe them to be safe. And as I was just going to mention, there's actually no scientific basis to why parents would think that. But in my opinion, there needs to be this drive to penalise parents who are not vaccinating their children, because it is a form of child cruelty. You are actually putting your child
on that point, miss.
Yeah.
You said that smallpox was eradicated in the 80s by vaccinating, and at that time there was no such policy. Up to date, the thing that's that you're arguing has driven vaccination levels down is actually rumours and myths. So would you not agree that a better way to tackle this would be education rather than punishment?
But education is that we've been trying for several years to get people to vaccinate their child, and they're not doing that. We've been educating people about the fact that the MMR is fine. And people are still not doing that, so I actually think now we need to start going for some more stronger measures to do it. Because up to this point, it's not worked, and I don't see how any other things would start to work either. So, as I was saying, I think it's a form of child cruelty, and that we need to start being more pushed towards it. And this model has actually been introduced in Australia on January 1st, 2016. So what they've done is basically said that the same thing that we're kind of proposing is that if your child is not a year within the vaccination schedule, the Australian vaccination schedule, they're removing your family tax benefit, which is worked out on how many children you have, the age of those children and your income, and they're also taking away your childcare allowances. It's flexible. It's not like we're saying that if you don't make your first appointment, that's it, your benefit's been removed. Because what we are saying, you've got a year to do it. So if you're on holiday, like you've missed a few appointments, you've still got a year to do this. So it's not coming into effect straight away. And also, if your child is unwell, no one's going to be forcing your child to get a vaccination when they're not in a fit state to do so. So you can get a letter from your doctor, which means your benefits will still happen and still be there for you. So in the UK, we're proposing to do the same thing. What we're proposing to do is removing the child benefits from those who've refused to vaccinate their children. And in the UK, the eldest child receives £20.70 a week, and any child thereafter receives £13.70 a week. And I think the opposition might say that this is going to kind of discriminate against the lower classes, but in actual fact, 98% of those who are eligible for the child benefit actually claim it. So this is actually going to have an impact, big or small, on everyone across the whole population. So that's it. Thank you very much. I've explained what vaccines are and the importance of it. I'm just going to go into safety, and Craig's going to wrap this up later. So thank you very much.
Hold your applause, because Evie Watt is also a maiden speaker, so can we have another? And following her is the first speaker for the opposition, Mr. Jonathan Finlay.
I'm not going to start off by talking about anything irrelevant, like science, or I'm going to start off with three general premises. My colleagues on the opposition will engage more substantively with some of the points that have been made in the speech we've just heard. My three premises are as follows. One, now this is really getting down to basics. One, rights exist. They are a viable, good way of protecting minorities and ensuring moral consistency. Premise two, rights are not necessarily in harmony with one another. They can conflict. So premise three, we sometimes have to make a decision about which rights we want to prioritise over others. I am going to argue that ensuring and enshrining the right of parents to raise their children as they wish, and that includes putting whatever chemicals or not into their children that they wish, is a right which should be elevated above the right of the majority to be insulated from diseases which may or may not spread if we allow this small number of parents to do this. In other words, I'm arguing the primacy of individual freedom and the freedom to persuade people and win them over rather than coercion as is being proposed by the speakers on my right. Now, just a slight caveat here, it may well be argued that if I'm arguing this pseudo-libertarian position, why do I want people to continue to receive benefits? That's not a very libertarian angle. Those are the parameters of the debate. We're not talking about whether people should have benefits or not. We're talking about whether one group receiving benefits should be discriminated against. This isn't about government intervention or not. It's about arbitrary government discrimination. And also, we're not saying that the parents who want to not vaccinate their children have to receive the benefits. They can choose not to receive those benefits. The point is, we are privileging choice. Now, I read an article earlier on, about 3 hours ago, so in the early stages of my prep for this speech, in Time magazine or on the website, by a chap called Jeffrey Kluger. And his basic angle was that parents are a bit frustrating, they're a bit silly. Because you can keep making all these reasoned arguments and giving all this evidence to them, but they won't do what we said. They continue to, in small numbers again, not want to vaccinate their children. Isn't it annoying when people don't agree with you? That is really a bee in my bonnet. I think that they should definitely be coerced instead. Rather than try to engage with them, rather than accept the challenge that if you haven't thus far, you need to try harder, I'm not going to stop altogether.
On that question.
Which is, please.
If you're talking about autonomy here, effectively, for children who don't actually have autonomy, the parents do. How do you justify your not wanting wanting to give the parents autonomy but taking away justice from the child.
Well, as you yourself conceded and actually arguing against the point I thought you were going to make, that individual children cannot be considered full moral actors because they have not reached a level of moral development and intellectual development that's necessary. We are talking about the parents' domain, their rights, and that includes their children. That's recognised, I think. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Secondly, I've made that specific point about that article, but there is a bit of a slippery slope issue here. And the slippery slope is that once we decide that it is morally justifiable to punish parents for choosing to raise their children in a specific way and for allowing certain undesirable biological traits to predominate, that starts to get very concerning to me. And it's not just biological traits. I'm an atheist, and I happen to think if parents didn't raise their children in one religion or another, there actually would be many fewer problems in the world. But I'm not going to argue that parents should be financially penalised for raising their children in one religion or another.
On that point, Carmel.
Go.
We're starting by using the phrase many fewer. Secondly, you seem to be arguing that the right of the majority not to become disgustingly ill is trumped by the right of a small minority of gay male readers to believe in pseudoscience and shape their lives by it.
I'm arguing for the rights of individuals against the tyranny of the majority. Yes, thank you for putting it so eloquently. That saves me from making my next point, because that was the summary of my argument. I might as well just let Finn do the whole thing, but frankly, Finn is the best argument for
Finn. Finn, sit down.
Please don't do it.
We heard the principle of the moral principle of majoritarianism received its scientific parallel in the concept of herd immunity, that if enough people are vaccinated, it will prevent spread to people who can't be vaccinated for whatever reason. Well, I go back to my point about us having to prioritise one right over another. This is a zero-sum game. This is a case where rights conflict, and we have to make a choice, and we have to make a sacrifice. And I prefer reason and argument and persuasion and human ingenuity to come up with other treatments or other methods of protecting people from disease that don't meet with suspicion and contention to an overreaching technocratic majoritarian government financially pressuring people to raise their children as not as they see fit. In conclusion, I think personally that parents who make this choice are mistaken, but they're not morally wrong. They want to do what is best for their children, and it should not be the role of the state to attempt to dissuade people from following their own conscience. I beg you to oppose the motion.
Thank you very much, and I would now like to welcome the second speaker for the proposition, Mr. Arjun Bora.
Hi guys, my name's Arj. So I think that we can all agree on one thing here in this room, that every child deserves longevity with good health and a good quality of life. I don't think anyone in this room will disagree with that. One way that we can increase longevity and good health in children is vaccinations. Vaccinations help us achieve these things that I've just said. And vaccinations are one way in which we can reduce health inequalities within our healthcare system. I've just recently done a module in patient safety and health inequalities, and our healthcare system is rife with aspects of care that produce health inequalities in people. Providing vaccinations for children means that from the onset of life, these children all have the same chances in life and will not be killed by a preventable disease, reducing the health inequalities in these children. Numerous studies have been done to show that it tends to be the lower socioeconomic groups where we see the poor uptake of vaccinations. It's also been shown that these lower economic social groups tend to be the ones that are most vulnerable to susceptible diseases. So, if anything, we should be promoting vaccinations Although we've tried through education and whatnot, as Evie Watts has already alluded to, only in some places do we see about 70 to 80% of uptake of these vaccinations. We need to give the more vulnerable people in our society an incentive, as we are proposing, to reduce their health inequalities and ultimately provide them with the best possible healthcare from the onset of life, and not allow them to make these stupid decisions about their children and increase health inequalities in their children, even though this is not the child's decision. I believe that every child should be vaccinated. This isn't about the autonomy of the parents, it's about justice to the child. Let's forget about herd immunity for a second and public health policies or strategies or meeting targets. What we're actually proposing when we strip this down is that indiscriminate of age, sex, race, ethnicity, social class, family circumstances, no child should be disadvantaged by a selfish decision that their parents have made and should not die due to a preventable disease.
On that point, sir?
Yeah.
But they should be punished if their parents will to stop them from being vaccinated through strong for their benefit to withdraw.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
You are happy with children being punished if your attempt to disincentivize parents doesn't work, so the children lose the benefits of their parents receive. Absolutely, punishment.
I take your point. I don't think it's a punishment, because the punishment is not saying that we're taking away the benefits straight away. As Evie Watts has already said, it's actually a system which allows people a significant period of time, and there's significant things that are in place to make sure that those people are able to gain the access to the vaccination, regardless of any of the circumstances. And my next point is actually talking about how we're not talking about forcing people to do anything here. What we're talking about is things like inviting people for vaccinations, delivery, follow-up of non-attendance. We're not actually forcing anyone to do anything. We're just proposing that this is the right thing to do for the children. So no one's discriminated against, or no one we are disadvantaged by our argument that we're proposing, I don't think, anyway, personally. So, as we said, we're taking into account people's understanding and preference and ability to access services. And as I said, this is what we're trying to do, to approach this in a holistic way so that we understand that people may be opposed to vaccinations, but I think it's important to educate them that this is the right thing to do. So we're not talking about a Craig Miller-style benefit cut. We're talking about pragmatism here and not idealistic views. I think we finally cracked him a little bit on that one. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is say that vaccines are safe, vaccines save lives, and every child deserves longevity and good health. And just on the point of the MMR vaccine and the link to autism and bowel disease, in 1998, Wakefield and his team proposed this in a paper that was published in The Lancet, and he proposed that there was a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. After the publication, though, one thing that wasn't publicised very well was that there was a financial conflict of interest. His co-authors withdrew their support from the paper itself. The GMC, General Medical Council's investigation showed that children with autism were being subjected to invasive medical procedures without ethical approval, and Wakefield was struck off from the GMC. He was barred from practicing medicine in the UK, and the paper was withdrawn from The Lancet. So any parent that agrees with the fact that vaccines could cause detrimental health problems to their child or could cause autism is technically agreeing with Wakefield's dishonesty and condoning child abuse, and I don't think that that's valuable for any parent to have any of those qualities. Vaccines go through decades of tightly controlled, regulated research and clinical trials and have proven to be safe before they're even tried on any human being. Yes, all medicines come with some risks. That's something that's possible for any drugs, any medication that we have. But most of the most of the adverse reactions that we see with vaccinations are short-lived reactions or things like flu-like symptoms. You have to ask yourselves, what would you rather your child have? Flu-like symptoms for a few days or a few weeks, a short-lived process, or would you rather that your child die from a completely preventable disease? I think I know which one I would choose. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that autism was caused by your vaccine, even though we've proven through medical research that it's not. If we did an experiment, Wakefield said that in every 110 people, one child would get autism. So we have two groups of people. We have group A, 110 children who get vaccines. Group B, 110 children who don't get any vaccines. We're saying group A, one child will get autism. That's not great, but that's what Wakefield was proposing. Let's take group B then. So no vaccinations. Diphtheria. 13,000 to 15,000 children got diphtheria the year before the vaccination was established. 40% of these died. the year before the salt vaccine and polio vaccination, 58,000 cases of polio. 80% of these would either die or be left with severe permanent disabilities for life. Meningitis, hepatitis A, hep B, flu, mumps, pneumonia, TB, tetanus, chickenpox, smallpox, all of these conditions, if group B was not vaccinated, there'd be less than 15 of those children that would survive to adulthood because of these conditions. I think the last question that I would propose is just, which group would you want your child to be in? The group A, where you get your vaccinations, and maybe one child who experiences an adverse reaction, which isn't autism, because that's been proven, but say flu-like symptoms, or would you rather them in group B, where less than 15 of them will survive to adulthood? Thank you.
Thank you very much, and can we get another round of applause for Arge for his maiden speech? For the opposition is Mr. Sean Byrne.
Good evening, folks, to the chairperson, to tonight's crowd, to the proposition. I will begin by saying this: I'm not opposed to vaccines. I think they're great. In fact, I quite like their first few albums. The science behind the vaccinations and the benefits they bring to young people and to young children is not up for debate. What is, however, is what I believe to be the first and arguably classist motion we have before us tonight. People on benefits are, by definition, vulnerable to one degree or another. Whether it be the under threat, tax credits, child benefits, or the benefits that keep many of the 1 million under or unemployed people above the breadline, benefits provide a social good and hold poverty at bay for so many. There are many reasons as to why parents might refuse to not vaccinate their children, which are more important to them than not being bothered, as been argued by the proposition so far. These may include religion, wayward adherence to homeopathy, superstition, widespread urban myths about causing autism, mistrust of criminally convicted pharmaceuticals, and the list goes on. Vaccine deniers are not in a strong minority, and because the science behind vaccinations is so overwhelming, their views are, rightly or wrongly, excluded and rejected by mainstream opinion and by society at large. The key point is this then. These are fringe groups, and with the people who refute or ignore or simply do not know the science behind vaccinations and all the good it can do for young children. Indeed, they may simply favour alternative parenting strategies or hold deep religious convictions. In any case, these people are already ridiculed and coerced and pandered to by the rest of society. Now think of the irrevocable isolation that this group would suffer if society deemed them not fit for basic support because of their deeply held beliefs. Is this the form of society we want? And how does the proposition feel that this group will react to this brutal stigmatisation? Do they think it will be everything okay, they will change instantly? No. It's clear that further ridicule and enforced financial hardship by the state will not bring these people or their ostracised belief systems back into the fold. It will not lead to a positive conclusion or a settlement to the issue of non-vaccinated children. It will drive them further away, entrenching the beliefs so many believe are wrong and harmful, and therefore worsening and polarising the issue. But what is more than this are the vast human hardships that will be inflicted upon these parents and their ever so vulnerable children, that the warped and destructive logic that spawns from these hardships. So I ask the audience, and indeed the proposition, to consider one more further and more compelling point. If we think that not vaccinating children is irresponsible and leaves them vulnerable, and that this is the motive behind this motion, then why do we believe non-vaccinated children, without the money for nutrition, clothes on their back, or a roof over their head, would improve their lot whatsoever? Honestly, what is worse, an unvaccinated child or a hungry unvaccinated child, an impoverished unvaccinated child? In this case, it is very clear who is more vulnerable, and society enters a dark chapter where we deem enforced economic hardship as a legitimate form of coercion against those with unpopular opinions. Indeed, it appears to me that the motivation behind a view this uncompassionate and radical simply can't stem from a concern for the welfare of children or their parents. The implications of this motion are both dangerous and self-defeating, and further jeopardise the capricious situation irresponsible or ideologically bound parents have put in them. So it seems to me that their motivation stems in part from an equally ideologically bound animosity towards state benefits and the wealth distribution required to cure them. And my friends, this is certainly an unprecedented virus that we should do our utmost to vaccinate against. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And to close for the proposition is Dr. Craig Miller.
Okay, so even I all can see that a hungry, unvaccinated child is worse than a non-vaccinated child. Okay, I can see that even from my wide right position. I think on everything. Healthcare, though, is probably the one thing that I am anchored to centre ground. And I truly believe this isn't a debate for left versus right. It should be a debate for idealism versus pragmatism. And that's typically what we're talking about today. Now, as we've already said, every single healthcare policy that we introduce has to reduce health inequality. It is absolutely right. As Second Op has already said, it's right. We have hungry children, we have cold children, we have unclothed children. This is not good. Okay, but let's look at what the WHO have said are the two single most important things to reduce health inequality. Number two, sanitation. Number one, vaccines. That's from the World Health Organization. They're their two main things that they want to target to reduce health inequality. So, do we accept if a parent allows their child to live in squalor? Do we allow them to defecate where they eat? As happens in various villages, it's not funny, in sub-Saharan Africa. Okay, where we spend as a country billions of pounds on education to stop that from happening so we don't have rife gastroenteritis. We do not allow that in this country. And that's number two on the World Health Organization's list. We don't allow that. We have an authoritarian approach. We will phone up social services. We will then phone up the police and children will get put into care. Tell me why we do that with number two on the list, but we don't do it with number one.
On that point, sir?
Yes, please.
That would be all very well if your argument was about putting these children into care, but it's not. It's about withdrawing benefits from their parents.
Okay. Good point. Now, I think that whenever you have a policy, you have to have something that's targeted and proportional. Okay? And this is the first step, I believe, on a ladder that basically makes this a proportional policy. And I will go on to that in a minute. So, what we have to look at here are the causes of causes whenever you have any sort of health inequality. It's already been alluded to on opposition that people will hold a libertarian view. Now, I was very glad you brought it up because it's actually the one time I disagree with the right. So effectively, you have these people that don't believe there should be any government intervention in their lives. I'm sorry, no, that is wrong here. Okay, you have children, and yes, a parent has autonomy over that child until such situation whereby they're not doing right by that child. Let's take a very serious situation here. Child run over, Jehovah's Witness, under the age of 16. Does anybody know what would happen in a hospital to that child when the Jehovah's Witness parent refuses to give a blood transfusion? What happens? The doctor phones up the director of the hospital, the director of the hospital phones up court, that child is given a blood transfusion against the wishes of the parent every single time. So why are we going to discriminate against the child who won't get Why are we going to discriminate against the child who won't get a blood transfusion, but we won't do the same thing on vaccinations, which is number one on the World Health Organization's list? You rightly brought up autonomy, but you did miss out three other key points of medical ethics. One, do good. This is doing good. Two, do no harm. This is doing no harm. And thirdly, justice. And you basically skirted over that entire point. The problem is that to give that child justice, you have to vaccinate that child. So it's not an argument about the parents' rights and the state intervention. It's actually an argument about justice for that child against the autonomy of the parent. That's what I was trying to get at here. And I'm sorry, justice for the child is the most important point here. Not the parents' position on vaccinations. Now, that's the first reason why parents are opposed to vaccinations, is their libertarian approach. You then have some more reasons, as was brought up by Second Op. Okay, the homeopathy approach. And I'm going to try to not laugh the entire way through this. If it was a medicine, as it was 1,000 years ago, it would now be a medicine. Otherwise, it becomes potpourri and perfume. It doesn't work. Stuff like poppies worked and has now become a medicine. Otherwise, it goes into a pot and smells good. To basically say that a homeopathy approach to bringing up your child works is absolutely ludicrous. I actually think it's sick. We have to do what we can in this society to reduce health inequality. That is what we have to do when we are talking about any healthcare policy. It's exactly what we have to do. So now let's look at why we are saying benefits should be removed. And that, to me, is the crux of this debate. Everything else is basically just waffle over the top. You've got to target those in the lower socioeconomic groupings because they are the ones who do not vaccinate, on the whole. That's what every single paper will show. It's unequivocal, that data. They're the people who also most rely on benefits. That is why, and I'll go back to your first point, it's a targeted approach. Okay, these are the people who don't vaccinate. We've come up with a policy that targets those who don't vaccinate. It's therefore the thing we have to do. We do not want to take away benefits. But this is not a Craig Miller Tory cut. This would probably end up costing money. Okay, that's the reality of this situation. In the short term, this costs money. So we're actually putting money into public health, not taking money away. The real saving will actually come 20 years down the line when people aren't getting the health diseases that you are then preventing. That's where the money saving comes in. It's not from taking away their benefits. That's not what we want to do here. We want to use a stick. The education has not worked. 70% in certain boroughs in London, it goes as low as 70% don't vaccinate. And when vaccines only work 93% of the time, by my maths, that's 63% of people can be vaccinated in a borough. That is horrendous. That's imagine 63%, sorry, the other way around, 47% of 37% of people actually defecating on their plate. It's the same thing according to the World Health Organization. It's not a funny matter. Go into sub-Saharan Africa, go to certain villages that basically we haven't gone into and effectively talk about how you deal with sanitation there. And you'll see the actual rates of gastroenteritis decrease massively. That's a key point here. The other thing that we talk about is proportionality. Now, I don't believe this to be a heavy-handed approach at all. I actually believe this is a very gentle approach. A heavy-handed approach would be, you've not vaccinated your kid, you're getting arrested. That's heavy-handed. Okay, slightly less heavy-handed than that. We'll wait 3 months and then we'll arrest you. That's still quite heavy-handed. This is a year we are giving parents. Okay, if the doctor says you can't be vaccinated because you've got an immunosuppression, you won't get vaccinated. If your child is ill at that time,
wrap
you won't
up,
get
please.
Vaccinated. I'm sorry, can I have about 2 more minutes?
No, nope. Wrap it up.
Madam President, can I request an extension from Mr. Green?
No.
Wrap it up.
Go on, someone second.
No. Okay, it goes for a vote. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
Carry on. 1 minute.
Okay, so in terms of proportionality, I'll go back to that point about Jehovah's Witnesses. We phone up the court, we give them a blood transfusion. We're not going anywhere near that here. This is a very gentle approach that will incorporate an entire holistic approach to making sure that we target the first thing on the WHO's list of basically trying to reduce health inequality. Number one here, folks, not even number two. We already do number two. This is a targeted proportional response to dealing with a major cause of health inequality, doing the analysis of causes of causes, targeting those who are most vulnerable in society. This is not me coming up here taking away benefits. This is actually me trying to help the population.
Thank you very much. And after some bold claims by Dr. Craig Miller, I would like to welcome the closing speaker for the opposition and closing the debate this evening, Ms. Emma Chadwick.
Okay. So, as the opposition, it's my job to summarise the debate.
and ultimately prove why we're right and they're wrong, and I'm going to do it within the time allocated. Whilst engaging and eloquent, and I really enjoyed the speeches, I don't really think proposition got into the crux of this debate until Craig, even though, you know, he's not meant to introduce any new ideas anyway. Nobody in this room, I don't think, is saying that vaccinations are bad. At no point has the opposition said we don't think vaccinations are a good idea. So please don't let that sway your thinking tonight. We agree with vaccinations. What we think the crux of the matter is the policy. We're not saying vaccinations are bad, we're saying this policy is bad. So let's look at it. Just to pick up on a few points that Craig made, one was that this policy does no harm. You know, one of the principles of medicine or something was do no harm. I don't think that's fair to say that this policy will do no harm. What? No. What about the emotional harm it's going to cause some people? Some parents genuinely believe, rightly or wrongly, that this is a bad thing that's going to harm their children. There is significant emotional harm being done there. And the other thing is, Australia have implemented this policy, but there's no figures yet coming out of Australia to say that it works. None. Should we not wait to see, use Australia maybe as a pilot, see if this actually increases the uptake of vaccinations? Because there's nothing to say this will. In fact, one of my points that I'll come on to later, by David Ellerman and Helen Bedford, who are two paediatricians that write for the New York Times, said that they believe, and from policies they've seen similar to this, that this is not going to work. This is actually going to push people to the fringes of society. The harder the government stamp their feet and impose things, the harder people pull the other way. This isn't just we're going to slap this ban on benefits to you and it's suddenly all going to go away. There's no proof to say that. So the three main points that I think the opposition have put forward really well is that, firstly, this is punishing the child twice. Secondly, it removes the human right of a parent to keep their child safe as they see fit. And thirdly, it's more likely to push vaccine deniers, as we've called them tonight, to the fringes of society. So firstly, punishing the child twice. Yeah.
Yeah, you made the point about a right. Every right has a responsibility. In failing to vaccinate the child, you compromise their safety, therefore you haven't been responsible, and as such should lose that right. I would pose that to you.
I think rights and responsibilities are true, but I think there's a point where, you know, human rights kind of trump that. I think until a responsibility is an act of action, and not getting a vaccine is an inaction rather than an action. And I think to impose a financial cut that is so harsh on an inaction would perhaps be unfair. I think, and that's ultimately who we're punishing here, the child. As Sean put so eloquently, you know, these people are, you know, these children are going to be hungry, they're going to push to the fringes of society, as I keep saying, and it's not in any way going to help them in the future. It's also not going to help them get out of being in this bottom percent, you know, it's only going to enforce that. Secondly, it removes the human right of a parent to keep their child safe as they see fit. I don't know what more you want to hear from Johnny. You know, the argument that giving the government more and more power and that's going to keep us safe, you know, where does it stop? I don't want to... stop it. I don't... And thirdly, it pushes people... To the fringes of society. So, to summarise, I won't keep going on. It's punishing the child twice, it removes human rights, it's making government overly strong, and it's more likely to push vaccine deniers to the fringes of society. There is no proof to see this policy works. Let's not rush into this. Let's consider more helpful, more education, other policies before we go slapping this on our country and on the house. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you.
You saw us be excited about the house bar again. So, okay, so quickly, we're going to ask. ask questions from the proposition, to the proposition, to the opposition, and then any sort of points of standing on the motion. So if you would like to ask a question, please stand up and raise your hand and say your name for the moment. Yes.
Great. Surely there is a better way to handle this than a financial penalty, which just takes away money from people, reducing their ability to buy food, pay rent, buy heating and proper clothing, which will ultimately weaken the immune system of the child and make them more susceptible to the very diseases you want them to be vaccinated against.
Okay. I'm going to take Eva's first point. We had 2,000 cases of measles with disease eradicated, 9,000 cases of TB last year alone. Okay, so the weighting argument that's been put forward by Third Op is not really there. Okay, 9,000 cases of TB is a disaster. Okay, same with that level of measles. We really can't be waiting on this one. I know that doesn't answer the point, but I just want to say that we can't be waiting here. Okay, that's important. Now, in terms of actually wanting to take money away from people, that is not what we want to do.
It's what it's doing.
Okay, we hope and we believe that it won't do that. We believe that the people that have been caught up in the propaganda by a paper like The Lancet, and this would be brought out in when you're actually introducing the policy, you'd have to know and have to have the education increased at the same time to know that that Lancet paper that was brought out, that was debunked, with the doctor struck off, people knew that it was actually making people sick by not doing this. Okay, this has been introduced in California as well as in Australia, and you had the increased rates over there. It went against the Republican Party out there, which is something I sort of adhere to. Basically, we have examples already in California. The Australia example has been brought up. In California, it worked. It didn't push people to the fringes. Okay, there's other cases out there. It's not just the Australian system, and it's worked in at least one state in America, which is marginally liberal.
Brief response to the opposition.
I suppose it does come back, and I know, okay, the proposition doesn't want to take money away, but that's effectively what it will do. And the third prop mentioned sub-Saharan Africa, and that was of shitting on plates and all that sort of stuff. Education. So this is one of the most deprived and impoverished areas of the world, many nations of which are struggling with rock-bottom literacy rates, and with rampant political corruption, and the things that we all sort of disagree with. And the answer, as we have seen to that, is to invest in it, to educate, to inform, to try and bring people along with you, not to penalise, not to coerce, and not to attack. So why is this approach followed for number two, and not followed for number one?
Thank you. So, thank you. Now we're on to a question for the opposition, which is this side. Yes, the back, yep.
Hi, Jeremy Miller. I just have a question for you, but it kind of relates to what you mentioned. First, you talked about how this hasn't been tested yet, this policy of withdrawing benefits to parents from parents who don't vaccinate the children. And yet, you went on to talk about also that this would be punishing the child twice. So I assume that was a reference to what you mentioned. Worse than an unvaccinated child is an unvaccinated child whose parents also don't have the extra benefits for their children. So, isn't that a question, though, about the effectiveness of this policy? And isn't that exactly the thing that you said we haven't tested yet? If the policy is effective, then parents will be getting their children vaccinated. And if it isn't effective, well, we haven't found that out yet, but that is what you said. And you also said that the children would be punished twice. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'll give it a go.
Essentially, you've said we don't know what happens when we withdraw benefits from parents who don't vaccinate their children, and yet you've said the parents will be, or the children will be punished twice, implying that you're saying this policy will be ineffective.
So you're saying you've proven to be punished twice, but you haven't got the data proves that yet.
Basically, objective justice.
So
I don't really understand. I think I love my words a bit and got a bit mixed up. I do apologise for that. So this has been tested, but we've not seen the results of that yet. If there's a study in California I'm unaware of, that might be the case. But in Australia, which was the only case actually put forward by the proposition, we haven't got the results from that. Because we haven't got results from that, all we can do is theorise what might happen. Okay, yeah, it might work. People might be, you know, so poverty stricken that they can't simply go forward, so they go against what they think is the right thing to do and they get vaccinated, or what might happen, as you know, multiple paediatricians have theorised, it is just a theory, that they'll be pushed to the fringes of society and it's only going to punish the child twice. So I'm not saying it definitely will, but that is a very real threat, and it's one that I don't think we should be risking.
I just think the key word in Emma's reply there was theorise. This is all based around theories. Most of what you was proposing was based around theories. We're not theorising about vaccines. We know that vaccines work, and we know that vaccines are safe. So I don't think theories come into what we're talking about here. I think theories are coming into the fact that we don't know whether this works or not, whether Australia said it didn't work. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the fact that we know vaccines work, and vaccines are safe, and vaccines save lives of children. So I don't think theories really come into it at all.
Sage. Okay, so we're going to move on to any points abstaining in the motion, general points on the motion, on what either side said.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I think I'm remembering this right, so if anyone corrects me on this, that's fine. I think I remember hearing about when they were treating smallpox in Victorian London. Essentially, it wasn't very successful until doctors basically forcibly gave the vaccination to children. So, am I correct in remembering that right? And also, what did you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Proposition and then opposition. So,
That is basically what happened. The World Health Organization, it started off in sort of the early 19th century, I think it was. It started to basically forcibly vaccinate people. And then, as we came further on, the World Health Organization launched the global scale vaccination program, which got the levels up to 80%. So, yeah, what you're saying is right. It was basically, at the time, I don't think people really kind of knew about the evidence that was behind the vaccines, and it did take forcing them to eradicate it. So, and I kind of see your point. I do agree that we need to sort of start forcing people so that more diseases can be eradicated in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Or
opposition? Yes.
Yeah. So you're dead right. And forcibly administering vaccinations has worked. Unfortunately, that's not the motion, and it seems to be a chronic problem with proposition tonight. So, you know, force vaccinations if you must, take away their kids if you must, maybe perhaps educate, inform and engage first, and maybe invest in all this sort of stuff if you have to. But the motion is, everybody knows the motion. This House will withdraw benefits from parents who refuse to vaccinate. That's not what's been discussed as much as we'd like to have been tonight. And no one is disagreeing with the theory. Every single person in this room knows that vaccines are good. It's that, you know, putting people into poverty isn't going to make their situation any better.
Okay, thank you. Back to proposition. Any questions for proposition? Yes.
Craig, I thought you completely dodged Finn's question just there, so I'm going to ask it again. What do you do with the child whose parents still won't vaccinate them?
Me personally, I'd arrest them. I'm not even joking. I'm really, really not. I see this as the first thing on the World Health Organization's list of things that we have to be doing. If that's number one, we already enforce number two more strictly. We do. Why are we not enforcing number one as strictly as we enforce the second thing on the list? I don't understand that. Okay, I understand that some people are anti-capitalist, drug companies make some money. Okay, people make money in this world. But I understand that there's some people that believe that the government has no role in their life. Well, it does. And sadly, I have to accept that at times. But this is one of those situations where the government has to get involved. Okay, this is, I believe, a gentle approach to getting there. Okay, it's a gentle approach. We could go a lot harder at the problem, okay? But I don't think that would actually be necessary. The results in California show that it's not necessary. I'm sure the results in Australia will be showing it has worked, okay? Because this is a gentle approach which doesn't force people to the fringes, doesn't force children into care. But that would be the next stage if that's what you're asking.
Okay,
great.
That was great.
We still disagree with Korea.
That's all right.
That's all right.
Thank you for voicing the opinion of the room. So, any questions for the opposition? Just this side? Lots. Yes,
go. Just maybe address the first opposition, but kind of round up all the truly opposition.
So you spoke about how the right of parents to choose what happens to their children trumps the right of society to choose what happens to people in society. Well, what about the right of a child to live a healthy and fulfilled life? Surely that trumps the right of the parents to choose what happens to the child. And that was a point very well made by a second proposition. The children are owed justice, and that would seem to be something we would ignore completely.
Well, the point about the right to a healthy and fulfilled life, getting a bit into a positive liberty versus negative liberty distinction, because the rights I'm talking about were mainly freedoms from, or as you're suggesting, a freedom to. But if I must engage with on that level, then one could argue that one way in which a child can live a healthy and fulfilled life would be to grow up and be fulfilled by being able to raise their children as they see fit, because a life in which your decisions are dictated by a technocratic government rather than your own inclinations and opinions, while it may be physically healthy, it doesn't sound very fulfilling to me. I can't remember your other point, something about justice.
That was the same point, though.
Right.
brief response to the proposition? No, you don't have to. Oh, I'm sure you're dying to. okay, so we're going to move on to questions. No, sorry, I've seen any motion. Any points, sort of general comments on the debate? No? Okay. Yes?
Jill McManus. I was just wondering, what do you side think? When does justice trump autonomy?
Yeah.
Me personally, I think that you basically are talking, if it was the same patient, it's slightly different here. If you're talking about the autonomy of the patient and the justice of the same patient, it's a much more difficult question to answer, but this is not that question. We're talking about the autonomy of the parent versus the justice of the child. And because we're talking about two different entities here, it's always going to be the actual medical ethics related to the patient. And that's the key here, and that's the point that they've missed.
Yes, opposition?
I don't think justice and autonomy are equal.
James, I disagree.
No response.
Are concepts on an equal basis? I think autonomy can be quite specifically defined, again, as the freedom from intervention, freedom to do what one chooses, whereas justice is a very nebulous concept that can mean pretty much anything you want it to. So I don't think framing it in terms of an absolute conflict between justice and autonomy rather than majoritarian well-being and autonomy, as I did in my speech, is particularly helpful.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go for one last round of questions. So, both questions. Proposition,
you haven't spoken before? Yes. I'm not going to question statistics. I'm sure you're right that the people who claim benefits or the poorest in society are more likely to not vaccinate their children. But this policy doesn't bring about 100% vaccinations because it would only focus on people who claim benefits, or are people who do not claim any kind of child benefits or whatever, who may not be vaccinating their child. So I'm thinking, is this a viable policy to bring about 100% vaccination?
Yeah, that is a good point, Matt, but actually what I'm talking about is the child benefits that you receive if you have a child. So that is not at all based on your income level. Everyone in the country will get the same level of this child benefits. It's £20.70 for the eldest child and £13.70 for the only child thereafter. And actually 98% of those eligible will claim that benefit. And as I'm sure that might not be correct, I'm sure some people don't need it. Sorry?
It's 2% that aren't.
So 2% aren't claiming that benefit. And I do agree with you, this is not going to be able to target that 2%. But let's say of that 2%, we can sort of hypothesise that 2% are going to be in the upper socioeconomic classes. And this is a big sort of sweeping statement, but the majority of those people will be claiming benefits. The majority of those people will have vaccinated their children. So if you think about it in that level, it would be such a tiny number of people not vaccinated that I'm not saying we're going to be able to get 100%, that would be what we'd obviously want, but if we manage to get sort of 99.9%, then we've come such a long way and we're not going to get outbreaks of these diseases at those levels. So it's not perfect, but it would be a lot better.
Thank you. Group responsible opposition?
I'll go. If we're just sticking to a numbers argument here, you know, if everybody, if 98% of the population are claiming this benefit currently that's going to be axed, not 98% of these people are going to miss it so much that, you know, they're going to vaccinate their children. You know, £30 a week, if you're earning a lot of money, isn't a significant amount. You know, we've not had any numbers that have even estimated the amounts of people this is actually going to encourage to get their child vaccinated. Those numbers are still sort of pie in the sky.
Okay, thank you. And we'll have the last question to the opposition. This side, Olivia. Yes.
Right, Nathan. You were talking about how this policy will push people to the fringe of society, people with these ideas and such, instead of bringing them back into the fold. I'm not sure we want people with those ideas and that level of scientific literacy and anti-evidence in society, in the fold.
To be quite clear.
I don't think we should support those views. I don't think we should accept those views because they're outright harmful and they're just wrong. Outright wrong scientifically, objectively.
So they are on the fringe of society, and when a government comes out and announces, geez, people are so bad they will not receive any more benefits, it's like, geez, they are bad, but they're going to be forced away to society, people will start at the ends and they will be pushed further towards the fringes. So yes, that is an issue, but again, I don't see. You might have a reprehensible view of these opinions about our rats, but the fact remains they do exist in a lower socioeconomic background. And telling these people and demonising them further will not convince them to otherwise. Again, that is just a theory. And so whatever your views about, you know, not wanting to tolerate these people, I think we should tolerate them. I think we should help them along as opposed to throwing them away, casting them off, and saying you're bad and you're not getting any more benefits, so let your hungry, unvaccinated child do what he must.
Thank you. Brief response from the proposition.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, effectively what I'm hearing from the opposition is they actually want us to push harder at making vaccinations compulsory completely. That's what I'm hearing from the opposition. I might be hearing that incorrectly, but that's the sort of thing, argument I'm hearing, that this actually doesn't go far enough, and it's actually going to create some degree of inequality from taking away benefits, which it probably won't do, as it didn't do that in California. But effectively what you're doing by pushing people to the fringes of society here is you're going to allow people to find their medical information on Facebook or your friend's sort of mobile phone, and these are things that we don't really want to have happen. You need to get these people vaccinated and you need to try as hard as you can. I think we're going down a gentle approach here, and that's the thing that we need to be doing.
Okay, thank you very much. And the last point from the floor is the point of abstaining the motion. Anybody like to... Yes.
I don't know if this makes sense, but so if you remove, yeah, the idea is to remove benefits if you're not vaccinating, so in a way force vaccination, but it's kind of inhibiting natural selection. So in a way,
I'm a creationist.
No response to that. I guess it didn't make sense. Okay, so before we move to vote, I'll sort of go over the announcements again. Thank you for all the speeches and questions, by the way. So ID, coming up, letter for ID, Queen's ID, sponsored by PwC, thanks for that, all the promo. Teams are free, please sign up. Ben's over there, speak to him. Schools competition.
Can I add a caveat to the
of course you can.
We're also looking for volunteers to help out with the general running of the competition. I'll probably need about 7 to 8 over the course of the weekend, which I admit is quite onerous. But if you think you're really good at running kind of feather holding pieces of paper for the tab master, I would reward you with a very firm pat on the back. My eternal gratitude. So if that sounds like something you want, then message me on Facebook or something.
Yeah, also forgot to mention that if you can offer spaces for Crash, if you're coming to the IB, Crash would be appreciated. Debaters will sleep anywhere, floors, showers,
anywhere.
Unvaccinated.
If you have a garden, we could put a few in there, that's fine. Volunteers, speakers, anything with a big competition, so that would be good. Same sort of line, schools competition, volunteer judges helping out, that would be appreciated. And what was the other thing? We're going to the house bar after the debate, as I mentioned, which would be good because we've got a phone. And next week's debate is This House Believes in the Right to Bear Arms in the UK, but also next week is the Minister of Rights 166th birthday.
Woo!
So please come on to that and cheer your support for the Right.
When did woos replace applause?
And now we'll move on to the vote. So the first vote of the evening will be based on your personal opinion. So we'll go proposition, opposition, and then sort of abstain, abstention, motion. So if you believe that this house should withdraw benefits for parents who don't vaccinate children, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Meeting had a really hard test.
And all those who think the benefits should not be withdrawn for parents that don't vaccinate their children, please raise your hand and say nay.
Yay.
Thank you. One person. Bye. And all those who abstain on your personal opinions and motion, don't have any personal opinions at all. Yep.
Just say nay.
Seven. And this one is binding for the minutes, and so this is the one that would have to type, so we'll start to know your personal opinions. So those of you who thought the proposition was spoke about tonight, so these lovely guys here, please raise your membership cards and say aye.
Aye.
If you don't have a membership card, please see Robbie after the debate. You can look for yourself, by the way.
Well, we're voting for Christ, we're not voting for ourselves.
And all those who think that the opposition would have been right, do these other guys over here? You just keep up with yourself, do
Yeah.
And all those who abstain in the motion, so think they will spoke equally well or equally rubbish. Please raise your hands in there.
Well, that's for you.
Great. So I believe that proposition has won the motion of the meeting. Please join us all on the bar. House bar, which is up to and come to the debate next week, which is this house would have the right to bear arms in the UK. Thank you. Thank you.
I was wondering if people would ask why I've got my deck of cards with me. I truly don't know why.